accession number 19387, Reel 1.
Captain Perrins, Reel 1, where were you born, please?
Hampstead, in London.
Which year was this?
In 1927.
Can you tell me how and when you came to go to Korea, please?
I was with the 1st Battalion in Warminster, and I have no memory as to how we found out we were going to Korea, but when everybody else was told, I was told.
We ought to say this is the 1st Battalion Royal Northumberland Fusiliers.
Yeah.
And what was your rank and job with the battalion?
I was an assistant adjutant and first lieutenant.
Do you know roughly how long it was after the crisis had broken in Korea?
I would assume, and somewhere in the St. George's Gazette it actually states it, if memory serves me right, but this must have been July, and I think I'm right in saying the North Koreans moved into South Korea on the 25th of June.
Had you been?
But I bet that again is from memory, which is...
Had you been following the situation in Korea?
Of course not. I was a young lieutenant, far more interested in my social life than I was in world situation.
What was the state of the battalion at that time?
They had just... I'd come join from Austria, but they had just come back from Gibraltar. High percentage of national servicemen. Morale was very high. I think I'm right in saying it's the first time the battalion had been back in England for many, many years. 16 or more years. I don't use that as gospel.
How had recruiting to the battalion been going?
As far as I remember, perfectly well. I mean, perfectly at a normal level.
What kind of preparations did you and your brother officers have to make before going out?
Well, first thing we did, and I can remember being intensely irritated with the Attlee government, because initially we were asked to get as many National Service volunteers as possible to remain with us, to sign on for 3 years, I presume, to remain with the regiment and go with it to Korea. And I was put in charge of that program and working through a sergeant in each company. We started a big campaign and did extremely well. As you can imagine, young men loved the idea of going to some godforsaken place which nobody had ever heard of. Go to war, it was wonderful. Very exciting. And we did very well indeed. We got an awful lot of volunteers. No sooner had we done that than it was announced that, and I can't remember the age cutoff, but the net result was that most of the people we'd got to sign on proved to be too young under the new age limitation, because the government didn't wish to have the embarrassment of having very young men killed or wounded. And in due course, of course, that was all forgotten and we went back to normal. But that was the first thing we did. Then we, of course, all went to Bury St. Edmunds, where we joined the 29th Brigade and accepted in the reservists And all the normal training and issuing of gear and all the normal hoopla.
Anything special that was taken out to Korea?
Not that I remember. Don't think so.
Can you take me through the journey, please?
There was a normal... I didn't think it was normal at the time, but I'm now older and wiser. Snafus, one of which I remember I was supposed to go out with a number of people on an advance party to fly out to Korea. And so we said a tearful farewells to everybody, one's mother and father, etc. And kissed one's girlfriends goodbye, and we trundled off to, I don't think it was Bryce Norton, but it was somewhere in Wiltshire or Gloucestershire or somewhere down there, and arrived one evening, the idea being that they processed you through that evening and then you spent the night and then left, flew off at dawn the following day, and we went through all the rigmarole until we got to the doctors, and the doctor said, oh, you haven't had your cholera injections. You can't go. Well, obviously, our battalion medical officer had never been told we had to have cholera. And the truth of the matter is, the troops never did get cholera, as far as I know. Injections, inoculations. Anyhow, the net result was the following morning, instead of flying off to Korea, we all returned back to Bury St. Edmunds with our tails between our legs. Were suitably rude to the medical officer who claimed pure innocence, which was true. And anyhow, after that, I was made battalion baggage officer for the journey and down to loading a boat and everything. So we trundled off again, a train load of all the equipment, and went down to Southampton. And the night before the battalion arrived, we proceeded to supervise the loading. The boxcars were placed on the quay. Stevedores and crane driver would lower a large net down on the quay, and the material boxes, crates, whatever, were put in the net, and it was raised up above the ship. And we very quickly realized that the crane driver would promptly lower the load by flicking a switch and letting a thing drop. And the stuff would bounce around in the hold. So we objected strongly to this. And it pointed out that men's lives depended on the state of the equipment, and would they please not do that. While all this was going on, we learnt that Southampton stevedores have somewhat limited vocabulary, and there was one four-letter word with variation. They communicated purely with this one word and changing inflection. When they weren't using this one word, they were on strike. They made it very clear that they were not about to work if the first aid man wasn't on duty. And the first aid man was encouraged to go for tea, go to the loo, do whatever as often as possible. So in any 1 hour, they would do about 20 minutes worth of work. 40 minutes sitting around waiting for the first aid man to come back from the loo or the tea machine or whatever. Anyhow, we worked on through the night, and eventually it was quite clear that they were not going to understand how to lower the equipment into the hold without ill-treating it. So I and a sergeant from each company who went with me, had gone down to Southampton with me, we put our heads together and we decided what to do, and we all took our coats off, battle dress, jackets, rolled up our sleeves, went down into the hold and called a halt to the whole thing, whereupon I gave my famous speech of using the F word more than they did, and assured them that if one more load was bounced in the hole, we were going to break their heads apart. Whereupon everybody started behaving. And it was remarkable, the change in attitude, once we had shown that we weren't a pushover. And we all worked very smoothly from that point onwards. The boat was duly loaded, and the battalion arrived. And, I think I'm right in saying at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, the boat sailed, and off we went.
And the voyage?
Relatively uneventful. We had a smooth journey through the bay, turned, sailed past Gibraltar. We went to, stopped off in Port Said, had a march. 4 or 5 miles, it was about all, I think. And then, and to be honest, I can't remember. I think I'm right in saying we marched first in the afternoon after arriving, and then had some shore leave that evening, which you can imagine what that was like. Whole lot of natives trying to rip us off with every penny we had, probably succeeded. We got on board again, and the following morning sailed off through the canal, Red Sea. We stopped at Aden, but did not get off, no shore leave. Went across the Indian Ocean, which the only thing I can remember about all this was the rays, vast, great stingrays wallowing in the Indian Ocean. I needless to say, I'd never seen a stingray before. So, and I just came to my knowledge the other day that somebody wrote home to their mother talking about having seen a whale. I can't remember seeing a whale in the ocean. He apparently had. Anyhow, we stopped off in Colombo. There we had a rather more serious march. All I can remember about it was the appalling heat. We got back. We left earlier, before the sun was fully up. We got back to the boat about midday, all in desperate need of a bath or shower or whatever, to find that for whatever reason they'd turned the fresh water off. So everybody had to have a seawater shower or bath, which was very unsatisfactory. Anyhow, we then rushed off with very short shore leave. And I can remember having one of the most splendid lunches I ever had in the Goreface Hotel. And I was for the first time introduced to Nimbu Pani, which we, needless to say, we were all desperately dehydrated due to the march. We sat there eating shrimp curry and drinking gallons of Nimbu Pani. on the most wonderfully sparkling white starched tablecloths and napkins with a... I don't know what the word is, but a turbaned waiter standing behind your chair. Excellent. Got back on board, went on to, sailed on to Singapore, where, as far as I remember, we had shore leave in the evening, then marched again the following morning, then sailed on to Busan. I've read many, many times the story of our arrival in Busan with a black American band on the quayside playing jazz, and the Koreans, children waving flags, and singing God Save the Queen or something. But I have to say I can't remember any of that at all. It made no impact on me.
Was that because you were personally too busy?
I have no idea. I can't differentiate between what I remember and what I read, and I think I can't really remember anything. I do remember the train journey up to Kaesong, which the other day I calculated we travelled at an average speed of 3.6 miles an hour, I think, which meant that we were standing still more than we were moving. And we were in boxcars, all virtual boxcars. Very tedious. We get to Kaesong, where we were took over an American missionary school, brick building. And the outbuildings, and all relatively comfortable there. And then we started off playing soldiers from that point on.
What precisely did that involve?
Sorry?
What precisely did that involve?
Initially, very little. The brigade, shortly thereafter, went to up to Pyongyang, or thereabouts, because the front line had moved way up into the, and we were left in Kaesong, and shortly went to a company, two companies, went up to Sibyoni to what would be the word, man the Fayadon Sibyoni, where there had been guerrilla, quote, activity. And nobody was particularly sure whether it was North Korean or Chinese. And I still to this day don't know whether it was North Korean or... I think it was a mixture of both, mainly North Korean. Anyhow, we had a nice battle.
What did that consist of, as far as you were concerned?
What happened was, and let me just pause for a moment, see, try and find the right date.
Oh, don't bother about the dates, because that's on the record anyway.
Anyhow, it was late November. And a company had gone up, and there had been activity, so another company went up to join them with some gunners. And they reported back having had a full-fledged battle that night. They had a defensive position, and the enemy had attacked, and very close contact battle. This was the battery of artillery, troop rather, was literally firing over open sights. It was just pointing the guns at the ridge and firing, and it was sort of hand to hand to a certain degree, as I understand it. But the following morning, the colonel and I, or the colonel taking me with him, went up to Sibirne, where we reviewed the situation, decided that he would stay there, and I was sent back to bring up reinforcements and a lot more ammunition, which I did. Went back to Khe Sanh, and came back after dark. And I have to say, that was the only time that I can distinctly remember being frightened as to hell. I've never, before or since, been as uncomfortable, because we drove north up the MSR, and at the appropriate point turned east on the road to Sibirne, which was undulating, and we had this convoy with a well loaded with ammunition. The thing is, it would go bang if you ill treated. And as we got to the top of every ridge, we'd always see a flashing light ahead of us on the next ridge. And you never knew what it was. So you'd drive on, and you'd get there expecting something, but not knowing exactly what to expect. And then you'd get up over the ridge and look ahead. Damn me, there'll be another flashing light or something.
What were they?
To this day, I have no idea.
Other vehicles?
I don't know. I have no idea. It was looked as if there was somebody there. But I've no idea what it was. All I know was that it made, as you progressed from ridge to ridge, you got more and more scared because you didn't know what the hell was going on. In due course, we got to the last ridge and went down to our position in Sibirne, wondering why you'd been so worried. But we, needless to say, didn't have our lights on. So, perforce, we were driving very, very carefully and slowly, relying purely on starlight or moonlight or whatever it was. And anyhow, we got there and got the trucks unloaded and the troops, reinforcements were all situated. And in my absence, my soldier servant had provided me with the most superb dugout. And I can remember it vividly. But, because he was a very nice but not a very good soldier servant, Preston Little by name, who died unfortunately a couple of months, 3 months ago. He had rarely made an effort, and he dug down a very secure dugout and with a nice sleeping platform, and had my bedroll all unrolled, and it was covered with a tarpaulin and all very comfortable. And so in due course, when everything else was done, I went to bed. and having had a long and hard day, I slept rather well. About 4 o'clock in the morning, I suppose it was, I woke up to go to the loo. And whilst I was up, I walked 50 yards or so to attack the headquarters. And put my head round, went in. Whereupon they said, "Tony, where on earth have you been?" I said, "What do you mean, where have I been? I've been sleeping, have I?" "You didn't hear anything?" "I said, not to wash away drop. What are you talking about?" Apparently there had been another full-fledged battle going on. I hadn't heard, slept through the whole thing. Never heard anything. Anyhow, next day we went back to Koh Song. The whole matter was over. We were relieved by the rocks. As we had, in fact, I didn't mention, the first when we first went up there, when the first company went up there, was Y Company under Robbie Leith McGregor, and they relieved the Gloucesters who would have been there. And anyhow, we go back to Koh Song.
What happened back at Koh Song?
We lost, by the way, at that during that battle, we did suffer 5 killed, 5 wounded. And 3 missing, who turned up. They were, in fact, captured by the North Koreans. And about a month later, again, it's in the war diary, it may have been 2 months later, they suddenly turned up. Quite reasonably well treated, very well treated, actually. They were used, in essence, as a little propaganda by the North Koreans. Send them back and spread the word that the North Koreans were nice people and treated their prisoners well. And why don't you come and join this sort of business? Yeah.
So are you going to tell me what happened back at Koh Song?
Well, it was back in December now, and we nothing of memory went on in Koh Song. I know that all I can remember is that at some point we moved. To Sindonni, which is nowhere of any importance. All I can remember about it was that it was sort of basically in a riverbed, where we remained through Christmas. And nothing happened. As far as I remember, various companies would go off to take positions in various places, all of which is documented in our war diary, but again, nothing of any